Welcome to Starving the Horse on Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run Ethnopy Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Meinerhalle joins me at Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You're getting a call on the phone, so dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Call ID 17702. Or if you're in car, stop the universe on call, and you should find us there. But if you want the best online experience, yes, go to twitch.tv/SMU on call. You'll find the wonderful chat room, and you'll get to see my lovely face as we're streaming live on 9:30 on Thursday nights. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall. Give me the comments, sfuoncall. @gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters or X or Twix or whatever it's called this week, you can follow me. Just follow the account SFU on call. It's SFU on call. Also, if you want a personal account, you can follow the Paul Franz account, PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And of course, there's the business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. Again, there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely Talkcast gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Petrick was busy working on Module K and the Orion Master Starship book. And this week on Fallon on the online store is GURPS Romulan 2021. Goes for $24.95. It was newly revised in 2021. The GURPS Romulans is a source book for GURPS Prime Directive's Romulan Star Empire, the Federation's long-standing foe. The Romulans are the most intriguing enemy faced by the Federation, and the Romulans definitely regard the Federation as their greatest foe. In this book, you'll find out even more about the Empire and the people who inhabit it. More about the history of the Romulans, find out how Vulcans left their homeworld, found new worlds, and forged them together to create a mighty empire. Discover how Augustus Tal became the first Romulan empire, and then explore the Romulan-Gorn Wars. Moving on to the SFB Online tournament, we still have 4 signups, flops. They're open. By all means, come on, join the happy crew and so we can get the tournament going. I might actually send out another email just to remind people that there's still slots available. Also, when it comes to the library, Frank LeMay was busy fixing and updating some of the Klingons. Matthew Potter was busy fixing some general units and even added a large skiff. Also, this weekend, I plan on working on a tutorial to help them about refits because I've been very frustrated, especially when the general refits and not them knowing or understanding how that wonderful functionality works and how it can be better utilized to do things in a more efficient and better way. When it comes to general units and those that, in the case of general units, they have the different races and so forth. But I'm going to wrap a tutorial. I might even share a link next week. So if you want to, you can look at it and look to see what the definition tool can do. When it comes to the FedCom library, there's been no updates there. So with that, that is the news for this week. In the meantime, let's get on to the monster book. This one looked at least a little bit interesting, which is The Whale of a Problem. And it has to do with Alunda.
And I thought the same thing about when I saw the topic for tonight. I thought the same thing that I said out loud in the movie theater when I saw Star Trek IV. Not the whales.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
The last time, the only time I saw whales in sci-fi was Treasure Planet. The only reason I know about that movie because my son loves to watch it. So
okay.
Moving on and forward, the this is SL-348, a whale of a problem. Oh, ooh. This was written by Gary Carney. So, while he's gone, we get to talk about his scenario. And it's actually it's a two-player scenario. The description is, in Y-193, the prospecting freighter, Mother Macria, I think that's pronounced right, detected a small herd of Alanda feeding on an asteroid field. Recognizing that this is a certain sign of a probable trove of trace elements so vital to implementing the advanced technology, the owners of the ships ordered it to be move on and drive off the herd, with significant bonuses promised if the ship was successful. Actually, it's two players. And you have the one player playing a large prospecting freighter, and the Alanda, before determining the location of the trove, okay, to place one counter in the center of each cluster. Once the location of the trove of the trace element is determined, the prospecting player removes any six Alanda counters of his choice, leaving 12. The Alanda moves speed 6 unless they are in the hex of the trove of trace elements or have been damaged by the prospecting unit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and how you determine the placement. As Alanda are deployed, the two players alternating turn the Alanda counters upside down. Until one of the counter remains. The counter is the location of the trove trace element. Oh, okay. The prospecting player then selects six Alanda to be removed from the map. The remaining Alanda are then turned first up, and the play proceeds with the first allocation. Okay. So basically, when it comes to the setup, the interesting part about this is that, you know, basically, it's almost strategic in the way it goes back and forth. You keep on choosing counters, and then you know, you have the Alanda and the prospect. So basically, between the two of them, they kind of decide, quote unquote, which is the counter that is going to have the trace element. So,
right,
it's an interesting idea. I like it. When it comes to setting up the scenario. Okay. For damage reports, each Alanda is represented by a small freighter, SSD. The Alanda remain fully operational until they are killed. Note the Alanda small freighter operates normally, although at no cost. They cannot be repaired. Alanda are damaged on the damage control chart. Normally, and are killed when excess damage hit that cannot be resolved. Score. Killed Alanda are simply removed from play, and there is no explosion. I hope so, because they're not supposed to be actually ships. Okay, the Alanda perform very good energy allocation to keep track of its when the weapons are given to Alanda have recycled and available to fire. Alanda move at speed 6, turn mode of 0. Ooh. All Alanda will generally move as a seeking weapon towards the trove of trace elements. Okay. The Alanda are not affected by the asteroids except when they gain protection of the normal electronic warfare. Everyone that is damaged by the prospecting unit, it will immediately turn 180 degrees. Yeah, because I'm reading this. Right. If it gets damaged, then it will, you know, immediately turn 100 degrees away from the prospecting unit. And move speed 14 in a straight line for 10 impulses. The straight line the movement would cause to leave the map, the Alanda will turn and complete its movement along the map edge. Okay, each Alanda has one bioelectric bolt with 360 maximum range of 5 hexes and half a point of energy. The weapon can be fired once per turn, but not in the quarter turn of being fired. It's also armed with one plasma whip, 360, and may fire the seeking weapon. Okay. It has undercharged one plasma cloud. And it will drop it if threatened by a seeking weapon. Okay. This can be used one time in response by the prospecting player launching a suicide, indicating that the Alanda, if it is target on, it will only drop it if it actually block the movement of the shuttle. The Alanda will then, on the following impulse, turn and move directly away. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah. The reason why I'm reading through this whole thing real quick is that, except for, I don't see. Okay, so the whip can't be fired at the ship. Okay, for firing seeking shuttles and same with the plasma cloud. So the only thing you can fire at the ship is the bioelectric bolt. But anyway, the reason why I'm looking at this through this is that I'm wondering if this whole thing can be, other than the setup, and even that might be able to do it, which is, a lot of this stuff could be automated, you know, especially given, other than.
Oh, you mean for the client? Yeah, you could automate that pretty easily.
Well, I mean, in failure, you don't even need a second player. This could be a solo game. The only thing, because according to,
Well, actually, the issue with it is that the player playing the whales does get to influence where the thing is. So if you're doing this as a solo player, then you have a direct influence on the outcome of that part.
Right. Right. So instead, other than the initial setup, and in my mind, in theory, you could do it via randomness. You could roll, you know, put the counters upside down with one of them being, you know, different. Whatever that means, whether it means like, okay, you choose a fed ship, put that down, and then the rest are like Klingons. And then mix them together and then place them on the board. And then find out which one is the, like in this case, the Fed in my example. And that's going to be the trace element. Because according to this, the trace elements, where they're located, is known. It's not a hidden thing. If it was a hidden thing, then I can understand having needing two players.
But which one of those it is comes out of which ones are removed?
Well, it comes to the, okay, and again with the six Alanda that needs to be removed again.
You pull away the chits until there's one left. That's the one. But that one gets to be chosen as the last one because of the choices of the two players involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right,
not
right.
Different.
I agree.
That can change based on the choice of, like, if you want, if you're the Mother Macrea player, and you want it to be this one over here, and the guy playing the whale picks that one up before you get to the end, well, there you go, you're hosed. You got to change your tactical input.
Right. I understand it changes which one and how the selection is done. But what I'm saying, with certain changes, in my mind, this whole thing could be a solo game, a solo scenario. And it's not necessary.
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't be that difficult to do.
Right.
The thing is, the AI part of it would just pick which one it wants to have. And you make that random, but it takes away from the challenge aspect of it a little bit. Because it gives the non-AI player, the human, it gives him the ability to edge it towards a certain one more than another. It's like if you have a whale player and a human, and they're both humans, the whale player is going to try to pick his so that the thing is in the least convenient spot for the, you know, the freighter player.
Right.
But if it's just purely random for the AI, then that part of that particular part of the challenge of the scenario goes away. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, the only thing that I would say is when you write your code for it, you just need a little algorithm that makes it hard for the that makes the choices of the AI pick it so that the last one left will be in the least convenient position before reseeding the map with the other ones.
Right.
So that would be a little challenge for you.
Oh, I agree.
Otherwise, you're correct. But the thing to watch out for there is, if you let the human have too much influence, like he's not against another human, then it could be where he ends up driving it to an easy win versus having more of a degree of challenge.
Understood. As I was mentioning, that a lot of this seem like there is no decision for the whale player to make decisions. The only place is looks like maybe firing the bioelectric bolt, and that's it. Because when it comes to the cloud or the whip, campfire at the ship, which means it only can fire at seeking shuttles, and that's it. Well, fire the whip and then use the cloud against the seeking shuttles.
Yeah. Yeah, the main choice you're going to have is, can you shoot at a down shield or not? So.
True. Definitely interesting choice, I think, for the unit to represent the Alanda, and that is a small freighter instead of, you know, the normal monster thing, which is just a blob, and to kill it, you have to you do so much damage, and that's it. Though, in a way, it is the same way for this, because I'm not sure.
Well, there is an interesting thing in this, because that choice affects weapon systems. The Tholian weapon systems and the Seltorian weapon systems affect it differently. Like the shield crackers, shield breakers, whatever, they work normally against the shield boxes, but they're ineffective against the rest of the whale.
Right.
So.
But the thing is, there's a large prime spectrum freighter. I'm not sure what kind of differences there are when it comes to that unit for the different empires.
Well, I'd have to look. Generics. Freighters are generics.
Right.
Through all the empires. Very, very few exceptions to that.
Right. And they have...
The fleet ones. Like the fleet tug type setups.
Mm-hmm. But as you pointed out, when it comes to general units, they will actually have different weapons based on the different empires.
Right, but the most part, that's if you have an option mount. This one,
not necessarily option mount, because when's the last time you look at it, like module R1?
Oh yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, because everything has to be different.
Well, they use different weapons, but overall, like a large freighter, is the same.
Yeah, I think in this particular instance, he's talking about basically the generic original ones.
Right. That's one thing. Unfortunately, I don't know the bioelectric bolt, the weapons chart, to see whether that'd be really nasty, especially with, what is it, you have...
Dun-dun-dun. Didn't it just tell you on the thing here what it does?
12. No, not on this one. I'd have to... Let me see.
Well, there's a description of these guys in the next section, too.
Oh. Understood. Okay.
If you read down a bit, like, mm-hmm. There's a whole big article on them.
Right. Well, that's an old one. The means of Anchor Geminus?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look at that. Because it looks interesting, but that's not one I wanted to do this time. Right. Alanda don't have the MCIDs.
Yeah, I think the description of what it does is actually just up in the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just straight damage. It's pretty simple.
Right. Sure. When it comes to large prospecting freighter, yes. It does use the damage allocation chart. I was wondering how much, what's the weapons chart for the bioelectric bolt? Let's see.
Oh, like what does it get hit on?
Yeah. What?
This is RuPaul.
Wanna say hello to everybody? Say hello to everybody. Woo! Yeah. He wants his evening treat, though. I usually delay it on Thursday because their treats are at 10 o'clock. I usually don't end this until like closer to 11. So we'll just have to wait. But anyway, we have just a little bit of time because I wanted to talk about tournament cruisers. In this case, the Celtorian tournament cruiser. Though, this reminds me of something I had interaction with a new customer over at SAB Online. And they, you know, added a ship to the client, you know, the SAP. And they said, hey, you know, there's a problem. They added a ship in the SAP and showed me a Federation Commander ship. And I took a snapshot from the client and said, is this what you're seeing? And he said, yeah, that's exactly what I'm seeing. I told him, nope, that's not Federation Commander. That's the third generation. And basically he said, yeah, I don't like that as much. They say as much as the originals. It's like, can't do anything about that. I'm sorry. ADB restricted me to that. I can't use the original SSDs because they're a problem with copy. They're concerned about copy theft. And yes, Patient Zero, I know. Just
no, hush. God, yeah.
I know what he's going to say, so. I'll mention you right now, to your face. Just let it go. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I know. It's the... You can't go on.
Can't help it. Oh, so since... In the Sapphire Star tournament, just a reminder, we still have 4 slots available for the tournament. So if you want to join us, sign up. I'm already signed up. I'm signed up for the Celtorian. So if you want to pick the Tholian or maybe something that you know will kill me, pick it. Well, of course, you're still rolling your chances that you actually get me and not somebody else. Which there could be Klingons, Zinnies, Gorns, whatever. I know you don't. Because I keep a record of those ships. And I do my best to ignore what that is and just fly what I want to fly. You know, I'm not trying to game the system in any way, shape, or form. Even, you know, if I see, okay, a lot of people are choosing Klingons. I don't decide, oh, what's the best ship to fight against Klingons? And honestly, I don't know what that would be. I wouldn't select that ship.
Any of them, they're all perfectly balanced. It's tournament play.
Really, Doug?
You're welcome.
Okay. Back to the tournament cruiser. Obviously,
just pick good first. Thank you. And you're good. Don't tell anybody.
I won't. It's just a secret between you and me.
Yeah, and everybody listening here.
So there's actually someone funny. Listening?
Yeah, don't you see in stream chat? You got like 2 people in there besides me.
By the way, hi Chris. Hey Dave. Hey Iggy.
Oh, 3.
Sorry. What's wrong? Yeah, Dave's been on since, actually not the very beginning, that was actually Chris, then Dave. But I'm sure Dave was actually probably around. I did not actually check to see if he checked my sound. I'm hoping to fix it so it's better. You know, I need to sit down and do it and contact support about the whole recording situation. I think it has something to do with running on Sonoma at the moment. And there's something, because actually there's one thing I heard mentioning on Mackie Gap, which was that Audio Hijack changed how it records things on the Mac. Or captures things. Huh, that's weird. And I'm just going to do one quick thing here, because I'm pretty sure I do. Yep. Okay. I'm going to make sure that I actually started the recording, because sometimes I go through the whole thing and don't record it on TalkShoe, which is actually bad. Just in case something happens locally, I'll have nothing for that week. But anyway, get back to the Saturnian Tournament Cruiser. And that is tactics and strategies that it can be used against people. Because obviously, I know I've gone through this before, but I'm trying to think up new ideas, new tactics, not new the things to do, or just go, you know. Obviously, we can fall back at the old tried and true methods. Like for me, the way I fly, and anyone who's watched anything, watched my many evaluations of the different games that I played against and lost. There's some I've won that I don't know how I've won. Actually, that was one of the Andromedans. But the Sartorium, you know, normally I fly relatively fast. I rely mostly on my speed to avoid the seeking weapons, both plasma and drones, most of the time. Obviously, depending upon how many seeking weapons they have, like in the case of a Klingon, I'll debate on having wild weasels. But most of the part, you know, when it comes heavy seeking weapons, I'll have wild weasels available. If they don't have seeking weapons, then obviously the way to go is either save the power and use the shuttles for close in attacks, you know, knife fighting, or you can actually make them suicide shuttles. Now the only problem with the Saltorian, of course, is this. Those on the podcast basically is that the ship has one shuttle bay. And given it's one shuttle bay, you only can launch one shuttle every other turn. So
you mean at a time?
Every other turn. Yeah, you can't launch a shuttle. Actually, you're right. It actually is every impulse. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's one per impulse, but right. You had the delay.
Right.
As opposed to like the LDR, where you've got two shuttle bays and you can launch two at once.
Right, right. I was confusing.
And then with the delay, you can add two more out
for shuttle bays with FRACs.
Yeah, yeah. No, you can launch all your shuttles in one turn.
Right.
Just not like all at once.
Agreed.
But in this case, you can only get one out every so often versus two, like on the LDR and the regular Lyran and the Hydran.
And Black Shark?
The what?
The Black Shark.
I'm not sure without seeing the SSD on that.
Let me look. I can bring that up really quick. There it is.
I think that one might be a single bay.
Two bays.
Oh, it does have two bays?
Yeah, the Great Black Shark. Two bays.
Oh, that's super.
One, two bays. and no transfers.
I never really liked that ship.
Why not?
It just seemed to be like made to be too generic-y.
Mm-hmm.
Just just one of those things. It was just never. I just never really like clicked on light on it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the Great Black Shark in tournament play, anyway. And that is, you can either make it more Zinti-like, i.e., add two drone racks, or more Klingon-like and add two phaser ones.
But it's one of those things, like, if you want to make it more like one of those two races, why not just run those two races?
Oh, agreed. Well, the benefit of the Great Black Shark is the amount of forehull and rear hull. You don't
it's like kind of gained. It's gamed for the system more than the simulation of the races. It's just one of those. It's like where the power creep comes into the whole thing, or the jumping of the shark moment sort of thing comes, so to speak. That makes sense.
Yeah. But the thing is, when it comes to, okay, the Great Black Sharks versus like the Zinni, where you actually have, you add the two drones, so you have four drone racks. Obviously, you don't have benefit of the Zinni when it comes to disruptors, in that disruptors have the 180-degree firing arcs. Yeah, the FAR and FAL, you know, two of them each. Also, you don't have the scatter pack, so you know, obviously you lose those benefits. But you're gaining phaser ones. You have six phaser ones instead of four phaser ones. You don't have as many phaser threes, but the phaser threes you do have cover both the rear and the front arcs, and therefore they protect your phaser ones very well.
Yeah, and it's like it's more made for gaming the game system, sort of.
Oh, understood. It's
and it's like, yeah.
I know, it feels like a generic ship.
Well, it's not just the generic ship nature of it, which is a part of it, but it's also it's like it takes away from the uniqueness of the different classes of ships that you play in the game.
Right. Well, again.
And it also kind of like it goes into that power creep thing. You know, slightly better than Ship X, although it doesn't have Ship X's extra special abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, it's very generic. It has no true identity. You know, unlike the Klingons, where you know the whole idea is that it's got good, not great, but good maneuverability. It's mainly designed as a direct fire ship with augmented seeking weapons, you know, drones. And of course, you have the West Face phasers and the Wing phasers, which are very unique to the Klingons. That kind of thing. So, yeah, as I said, it's very, the Black Shark is very generic. It doesn't have a real, you know, identity when it comes to ships.
Saying about the Seltorian.
Yeah. So, with the Seltorian, obviously, particle cannons are great benefit in that they can, they're capacitors, so you can define, you can decide if you're going to have them be regular standard or overloads. And there's one feature I never used because I don't think I've ever had an opportunity to use it, just because, well, it's an opportunity, I guess, and that is the ability to fire twice per turn. Now, I understand that it takes, you have a 12 impulse delay between the two, which to me is like the Zinni C-Racks. The Zinni C-Racks can fire twice per turn, but you have to have a 12 impulse delay between fire of those drone racks, or launching from the drone racks. It won't be really particular, but is that something that I could take advantage of? I could use to better affect that feature, because
the yes problem. And no. Yes and no. The question is, how are you going to try to use it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you could use it to pick off extra seeking units. You have a massive wave out there. Or somebody launches shuttles. The problem is, if you don't overload it, it's a concentration of firepower versus spreading of firepower issue. So, you know, do you want to do more damage to your opponent if you get within overload range? Or if he's trying to kite your ship, then, and you can get that second volley on the same shield that you hit this turn, then yeah, absolutely do it.
Yeah. I think the only time that is really an option, I think, would be the SL Torium is actually chasing their opponent, but they have no way of getting closer for that turn. Now, the good part of it is that it could damage the shield, or if the shield is down, then you could actually fire through it. Now, range 15 actually is not bad. You have a 50% shot of hitting it for 3 points of damage. So if you fire twice, which is basically the same amount of energy, 2-1-1, if you fire the particle cannon twice, that's the same as an overloaded particle cannon at range 5.
Mm-hmm. Now, the trick is getting the same shield twice.
Yeah, which is what I was just to bring up, which is the problem, which, of course, is that since it's going to be a 12 impulse delay, most probably you won't be hitting the same shield. Because by that time, if you're following them like this, you know, around a circle, most probably they'll turn around and then they'll turn back and get a different shield into change the shield that actually is facing you, which I can understand. But as I said, that is one of those times which it could be effective. Now, the question is, how often does that happen? And if the shield is not down, is it worth the energy? Because if you save the energy, meaning you don't fire, yes, you lose a point and a half of power per particle cannon because you have to pay 50% of the energy to hold that amount of energy, i.e., if you want 3 points of power, you have to start by holding energy, 1.5 points of energy for that particle cannon.
Well, here's a question.
Okay.
And it's actually the really simplest part is like, if you're going to fire the second time in the turn, and you're probably not going to get their same shield, why would you fire at any turn, any impulse other than 32? And here's the reasoning. If you're going to fire it on 32, can you be close enough that your phaser ones can follow up on impulse one and make him either brick a shield a little bit or do some damage? I mean, if you really want to get the most out of it, you know, you could set up your attack for the next turn a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. The problem with it is that if you're not firing the overloads, this essentially turns this into a subtlety weapon.
Right. Understood. But if it was possible to get to hit the same shield twice using two shots,
yeah,
which I know it's a low percentage chance of that happening, because after you hit him the first time, he's going to want to avoid that unless it's just a damage shield and not a down shield. But then again,
the question is how much of what you're trying to do does it have to rely on your opponent cooperating?
Agreed.
Or being unable to not cooperate.
Well, yeah, agreed. As I said, the key there would be able to chase your opponent, especially if you get him against the wall where he has no options. He has to keep going straight or head back towards you.
Or turn and present specific shield to you. Yeah. It's a limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, how much of that is going to be circumstantial? It's like... It's 99. That's like 99% of discussion of tactics in a tournament like this is that it's so. It's rock paper scissors cubed. So. Yeah.
Yeah, and but at the same time, the question, dug them. But the question is, why fire at a ship unless you can get internals?
Well, the thing is, it depends on your play style. Are you going for a long-term grind down, or are you going for a one-turn kill? And what's your opponent going to be cooperative on or less non-cooperative on? Because, you know, The key to winning is doing what you want to do and need to do versus your opponent getting to do what they need to do. And he needs to not let you get a one turn kill. And this is, unless you can get to like range zero, you're not going to do like feds. Okay, Cat, stop that. You're not going to do Fed. You're
Omaha.
Fed kill. You're not going to do Fed levels of damage to right. anybody in this boat.
No.
It's deceptive with all those phaser ones, but it's really more of a subtlety boat.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the mission of this thing was not blowing people up before, but capturing them. So. You've got weapon system on this boat, like your shield crackers, that become worthless once the shields are gone. Other than soaking up damage. So,
true.
Yeah. And you're going to have to get multiple hits on somebody with this thing. So really, hitting them twice with it can be worth it if you're going for the long range game. Remember, you can win with a Fed by literally kiting and using proximity torpedoes. It takes forever, and you don't have to fire a single phaser one to grind your opponent down over time. And once you get them to where you want them, they're done. But that's a matter of being able to play your game, forcing your opponent to play your game.
Mm-hmm.
And in this ship, it's a subtlety thing that you either have to get that shield down and then go in and get on that shield and stay on that shield and strip them with multiple hits with your phaser ones, or grind him down to where every time you hit him, you're doing internals and basically, you know, Mitzia by either one shield going down and hitting it repeatedly or all the shields going down eventually and then just sandpapering them off to where you can't fight anymore. So it's just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as you pointed out, the Saltorian is not, doesn't have the crunch power of a Fed. So that means multiple battle passes. Hopefully you can arrange it so that you're hitting the same shield. Will that happen? Most probably not, because your opponent is going to try to avoid that. And especially given that Saltorian has
zero
seeking weapons. Therefore, they have no way to there's no mobile terrain at all to get them to turn the way you want them to turn.
Well, you got shuttles.
Yeah.
You could theoretically afford suicide shuttles eventually.
Eventually, yes. Actually, I had one opponent that's exactly what they were doing. And was that an opponent or was I a moderator? I forget which. One of those two. But basically, they didn't want to attack until they had four suicide shuttles completely ready
for the knife fight.
Yep. So for the first two turns, they did nothing. They just ran around. And then the third turn, okay, they had their all their suicide shuttles ready and ready to go, and they got killed. I think on the second turn, because they were still trying to get the shuttles all so that and then ready to go.
Well, now here's a thought, Paul. If you played this one, and I hate to say this out loud on the broadcast, but have you tried just doing it as a pure kiting boat, not firing any phasers, and just using your web breakers and your two-shot particle cannons, and just try grinding the guy's shield down over, like, multiple turns?
No.
Until he has shields left.
No.
And just think about that.
Oh, yeah. Well,
if
that's...
If you do the Fed proximity thing, which actually was a gold hat winning strategy 1 year.
I know what year that was.
Oh, that was ages ago. It was an Origins one, but which is where the gold hat used to be.
Right.
But,
understood.
I still remember that. It was like, and the only reason they got to do it, he got to do it, was because it was the final.
Right.
And they're
because you don't have a time limit on that.
Yeah, they're like, you fucker. Yeah, they were kind of annoyed with that, but somebody proved it can be done.
Right.
And there may be somebody out there listening that will remember that duel and or at least remember the report for it and mm-hmm. say, oh yeah. And because you could maybe get away with that pretty, not easily necessarily.
Right.
But if it means that, yeah, the only main constriction on it is your firing arcs. Mm-hmm. And that's just dipping in and dipping back out. And maybe some judicious use of speed changes. And not huge speed changes, but small, subtle speed changes to...
Right.
To let you get a turn back and then a quick turn away after getting that first or second shot in with the thing, with the particle mm-hmm. cannons, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I want to think of some other solution that I have not tried, you know. That's the whole idea of this.
Have you tried what I just mentioned?
No.
Because, I mean, it takes patience.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very subtlety-based attack system that will take a significant chunk of time. If done properly, it'll be extremely frustrating to your opponent. You could probably do a little bit of bricking on your shield some. And again, 99% of your problem is going to be what does your opponent pick?
Right.
Because if you find yourself up against the pig...
That
pretty much goes out the window. Well, yep. You're not necessarily dead, but you're going to have to overload those things and get right on top of him. And, you know, impulse 32 overloads followed by phasers the next turn. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, and you're on the luck of the dice part at that point.
Yeah, I figured that one out, because last time I played against... The wax in this El Touring, I got my butt kicked.
Yes, you did. So, but then again, you know, it's that's probably one of your toughest fights in this particular boat, because of his ability to brick and cause you significant damage.
Agreed.
The real question is, what opponent do you end up and what tactics do they employ?
Right. Because against Klingon, you could do it. Against a plasma, maybe not so much.
Oh no, a plasma one would be really good for you, because they're in kind of a bad position that allows you to kite them some.
Yeah, to a certain degree.
Because you just keep you have to keep your speed up and not get tractored.
Right.
With them. And you grind them down and start picking off their heavy weapons, they're dead.
Oh, agreed. The tough part overall with this strategy is just getting it set, because you have the problem with the initial battle pass. Because in theory, you can set it up so that you're running away from them and they're chasing you, but that's not what you want. You know? You want to be the opposite of the way, and that's a little more difficult to arrange.
Well, like Mr. Tyson said, you know, every plan, everybody's got a plan that doesn't survive that first punch in the face. So, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. There you go. But really, it's like, you know, if you go at it having plan A, plan B, plan C for your opponent, then it's just pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, if you've never tried that and you're up against an opponent where it might work, I mean, LDR would be a good one for that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your direct fire ones would be a good one for that.
Yes.
As long as you don't let them get the range zero on you.
Agreed.
You could probably tear the hydrant apart with that.
Maybe. The tough part with the hydrant is the fighters. Because they can fly independent. They can beat the crap out of you if they get close.
Yeah, and you got a ton of little phasers to tear them apart with, too.
True.
So, The key point here is, if you're going to do a kiting fight, you figure out a percentage of your phasers you're going to use every turn. And you try to stick to that to keep your speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're doing a kiting fight and you get caught, you're done, basically. Unless you're in a... You can switch right over to the knife fight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do the kite long enough, then the knife fight aspect will be to your advantage. So.
True. Well, we have to see who I have in the first round and whether it's applicable. If not, we'll have to try something else. Because, as I said, I would like to try something different. Even if it's something absolutely insane, you know? Because sometimes those tactics which are truly insane, and I do mean truly insane, those are the ones that catch people off guard and help you to win the game.
Yeah, at least once.
Yes. Agreed.
And
well,
that once is the moment.
That's all. Hey, so, yeah. Well, I need the once sometime. You know?
Well, the interesting thing about tournament play is you are living in the moment.
Right.
You can plan all you want. You can have a great plan. You can have a great plan A, B, and C. But once you start playing against the opponent, you're living in the moment.
Right.
And you got to be ready for change.
Very true.
And you also have to take into consideration the old five-dimensional chess, six-dimensional chess, seven-dimensional chess of, is he thinking of what I can do that's going to mess him up? And if he's thinking of what I'm thinking of, am I thinking of what he's thinking? And is he thinking of what I'm thinking? A lot of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Until your circuits explode. Yeah. And then he just runs up and punches you in the face and your plan falls apart. So, there you go.
Yep. The direct approach.
The general thing is you have a generic plan of how to kite, do you have a generic plan of how to do a knife fight, and do you have an off-the-wall tactic that might or might not work, like, you know, go in and tractor the guy at range 3 on turn 1. So, yeah, and see how that works. You know, can you get him up against the wall, tractor him, and then hit both of you into the wall?
Right.
I don't know if that would work. That'd be interesting. That you'd have to look up.
Yeah. Well, tough part about that is you have to, both of them, you have to be very close to the wall.
Well, the thing is, you hit the wall, you break tractors.
Right. But.
So if he tractors you and you hit the wall, you break his tractor. Might want to double check that to make sure it's correct.
Yeah, if he tractors me and slams me into the wall, I take the damage and I stop. If I tractor him and I run into the wall, it doesn't do anything to him.
Yeah, but you both run into the wall. Run you both into the wall.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, okay. Whoever's tractored, the tractor's broken on them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tractoring him, but he doesn't hit the wall, he stays tractored.
Right. Yeah.
There's some off-the-wall stuff for you. But then again, with Seltorin, that's not exactly a good idea necessarily.
Right.
Unless you're doing it so that you can break his tractor on you and you can launch a weasel. So.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay. Well,
so you were saying something about it being sleepy time.
Yeah, it's sleepy time. It's 10 of 11, and I need to put things
to bed so I can go to bed.
Cool. Let me know if you feel like stopping up in the next week or two.
Okay, we'll do.
All right. Thank you for having me on, Paul.
Okay, no problem. Have a good night. So, had a nice discussion about the whales and the Satorian. And had some ideas about different tactics that are outside the norm. Ones I haven't tried before. And definitely, I want to think outside the box. Some of this might be just freaking insane. For the idea of coming in to him, to my opponent on the first battle pass, turn away, let him chase me, and then turn right ahead, head right towards him. Now, that would be foolish in some cases. Let's say you're going against a plasma torpedo with the opponent, and they have all their plasma torpedoes. That'd be foolish. Possibly. Depends upon the arcs of the plasma torpedoes and where you are. You know? Some crazy, crazy ideas like that. But anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz. I bid you a good night.